today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
It's literally hard to believe, folks.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. I am Patrick Foster. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to another episode in our Paisley Underground series. I want to thank everybody who's chimed in with kind words. And big thanks to Paul Hayden for all he has done to prepare these episodes, do the research, and just share his passion for this music. And so far, it's been great. Has anyone been making a Paisley Underground compilation playlist yet, like me? We've covered the Dream Syndicate. Yesterday we covered the 3 o'clock. And today, a little band you might have heard of. They went on to some later success. Interestingly enough, we were talking about the Dream Syndicate and the 3 o'clock, both of whom put out stellar albums and then signed to major labels. And it all didn't quite go the way the record label probably thought it would. In this case, not the case. So with that, why don't we turn it over to the tape and Paul Hayden. We'll get the TDK 90-minute threaded up here that we recorded this on and hit play. So here we go. Okay, Paul, so far we've covered the Dream Syndicate and the 3 O'Clock, both of whom put out very well-accepted debuts, attracted the interest of major labels, and then kind of faded away a little bit. Didn't really achieve what maybe the record label hoped when they signed them. But the next group we're going to talk about, that might not be the case.
It's almost the exact opposite. yeah, crazy how these things work.
So, why don't we get into the discussion of the Bangs, as they were first known?
Yeah, so the Bangs, their origin story, I found out later, there is some question as to how they got together, but I'm going to go with the more interesting version, which is the Peterson sisters, Vicky and Debbie, were in a band and had someone leave, and they were looking for guitar player to join them, and their roommate at the time was also in a band and was looking for a guitar player for her band. So they put an ad, the Petersons put an ad in the LA Recycler, and Susanna Hoffs calls the number asking for the other person, the roommate. She was looking to join her band. And at the time, she wasn't in, but Vicky and Susanna ended up having this long conversation and realized, hey, I think you'd be a good fit for our band. Jam with us and let's see what happens. So she does. They play together. They have a good vibe and everything's looking really positive. So they decide to continue and get a bass player. And they bring on a woman, Annette Zelinskis, who would go on to, I don't want to get ahead of myself, so we'll hold off on that. So
okay,
Annette joins, and they play their first gig in 1981 as the Colors, and much like the 3 O'Clock, they throw a U in the name just to...
Yeah.
Show their loyalty, and eventually they change it to the Supersonic Bangs, which I found out was named after an article that Susanna Hoffs was reading about 60s hairstyle, and an old copy of it.
Interesting.
That's from the source of all human knowledge. So, you know,
it has, beautiful.
Has to be true.
So they go out, they play, and they put out a single. They self-release it on the Down Kitty label. 1,000 copies of Getting Out of Hand. A very raw 60s punk combo that was catchy but had a nice edge. Records, like, again, going back to the Dream Syndicate, the Petersons brought it in for consignment, gave it to Steve Wynn, who clearly is the man here. He's in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
So they drop it off, and he plays it. He loves it. And the next time they come in, he tells them how great they are, and they say, thank you. But you know what? We put out the record, you know, we it's manufactured, we have the copies, but we don't know how to get it out there. So he agrees to meet him later. And he kind of explains, like, logistics of self-distribution. And he goes, you want to send some here? Now, he's at his job. He's built up a nice network of folks
in
the country, so he knows who to get them to. And because of his name and the fact that he carries so much of everybody else's material or records, he can then, the favor is returned, they'll take whatever he sends them. So during this conversation, they start talking, and Susanna Hoffs mentions that she was friendly with this guy, David Roback, who was in the Rain Parade. And she also mentioned or asked if he had heard of the Salvation Army 3 o'clock. And she says, oh, yeah, I carried their 45 and they're great. And she says, why don't you give them a call? And so this is kind of how that whole community thing started, with this little meeting talking about how to get your 7-inch single out to the other part of the country. And
interesting.
So this is where that trip to Catalina comes in. And so it's basically, you know, the Bangs, Dream Syndicate, 3 o'clock, Rain Parade, I'll go out there. And on this trip, something very interesting happens, where Susan starts flirting with Steve Wynn. And Steve Wynn declines. He says, I think I'm going to go drink with my friend. So I think we need to take a moment to process this. Steve Wynn said, no, thank you, to Susanna.
It's got to be true. When I started looking at this outline Paul has generously put together for our recording, There are at least 7 exclamation points and question marks after this.
It's literally hard to believe, folks.
From what he says, she ended up dating Luis Gutierrez from the 3 o'clock for a couple of years. So I guess it all worked out.
It all worked out. Yeah.
So they have this trip and you know, the bonds strengthen and the band have to change their name as another Bangs. And they couldn't have been tremendously popular, but there was a band that put out a legal injunction or whatever, forcing them to change their name. So they said, fine, we'll just call ourselves the Bangles. No problem. So during this time when they're out gigging, Miles Copeland sees them play. And he had just signed the Go-Go's, so he was very interested in what the Bangles were doing and was very impressed and decided to sign them to the Faulty label, which was a subsidiary of IRS. And they put out a 5-song EP, which I believe is just called The Bangles. One's a cover that I had not heard of. By a band I had not heard of. It's How Is the Arab Thing? But it definitely fits in with their approach to 60s, combined 60s sound with the 80s punk edge. It's a good record, one that I call less raw than the debut single, but you can hear that there's something there. There's the harmonizing is really strong. The musicianship is really strong. Steve Wynn at the time said of all the bands that he saw, the Bangles were the ones who were, they were the whole package. They had the style, they had the stage presence, and they had the songs. They were the ones most put together in that respect. So they definitely were, again, on the right path towards greatness, let's say. After the EP, the Faulty label went under, and they were eventually signed to IRS. But somewhere along the way, they got an offer from Columbia. Because again, like with the other bands, there's a buzz, and the record companies are interested. So they're like, well, you know, it's a major label. They're going to give us some creative freedom. So let's go for it. So in 1983, they put out All Over the Place. I'd like to think that it's 1984. My bad. So it comes out in 1984. And I like to think the title refers to just the variety of songs. I mean, you've got straight ahead pop, you've got slower songs, you've got some pretty gritty songs, you've got some folky songs. I mean, it's all there. And if I recall, the this is going from memory, but I think it was Debbie who said that they wanted to make an album like Rubber Soul, where every song was different. And a pretty bold move for a new band who are trying to get established.
That's aiming high.
In the meantime, they had replaced Annette Selinsky with Michael Steele, who would be with the band for a good portion of the remainder of their recording career. But what I think is key to this record is that how it's really a band. You know, I think after this, it was kind of Susanna and the other three.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at this time it was really, I mean, three of the four members sing, and they're all, I mean, they all have great voices. They all do the material justice. You know, the songs are, I mean, again, I'm at the risk of repeating myself. I mean, these are all good songs. I mean, there's nothing to skip. You've got, you know, on the more popular side, I guess you would say, if you've heard of this album, you're probably familiar with Hero Takes a Fall. Which I guess was written about Steve Lynn, who they thought was getting a little too big for his britches at the time.
Oh, interesting. I've never heard that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. And he seemed fine with it. And then the other one, which I didn't realize at the time, was a cover of Going Down to Liverpool by Katrina and the Waves.
Right. Pretty amazing. I didn't know that either when I first heard this record and thought it was a Bangles song. And then, I don't know, several years later, Katrina and the Waves had a big hit. And then you started to discover, oh, they had other stuff. And also had Kimberly Rue, who was a guitar player in the Soft Boys with Robin Hitchcock. But at the risk of going on a tangent, that's a great song. It's a great, great song.
And even when I realized it wasn't them, I'm like, but it just sounds so perfect for them.
Yeah.
Like it's their song.
Exactly.
You know, it's just like they just do a great job with it. I mean, it's just wonderful.
Well,
And then, you know, there's what I call the sleeper tracks. You know, you've got a cover of the Merry-Go-Round's Live.
Mm-hmm.
James, a really great Susanna song.
That's my song. I love that one. Yeah.
And then Silent Treatment, which is, I guess, as punk as they got.
Mm-hmm.
A great, great song that leads into the last one, the More Than Meets the Eye, which is just strings and the Bangles. It's just a sort of lovely song, a great way to end it. I think they just, I mean, they had it all. I mean, it's all over the place, but yet it's still, a cohesive work of art, and I think it just flows really, really well. I think they really had built up the songwriting and the musicianship by this time. They were tight, and they still, you know, they still had that edge. While I was doing this, I looked at YouTube. There's a video of a show they did at the Ritz in New York. I want to say it's 84. It's this tour.
Mm.
And it's like, they rock. I mean, there was no politeness this night. They were.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, based on what came after, you may be a little bit surprised that they could, that they had this edge, but they really, really did. And they really put their heart and soul into it. And this is the one, I think it's their best album start to finish. I think it's their best statement. It really shows off all their strengths and, again, a band, not just, you know, a singer and the others. It's a band effort, and one that I go back to often, and it always hits the spot. I'm never like, oh, this is dated or whatever. It's just, it sounds great.
Completely agree. And, you know, like you said, the variety of not only songwriting covers, but the lead vocal variety is amazing. It's a band, like you said, again, Paul, right on the cusp of becoming, you know, super tight, super powerful, really finding, you know, can we really, you know, are we really this good? It's almost like you're looking around and saying, wow, we are really this good. And to open the record with Hero Takes a Fall, you know, that's a very Dylan-esque kind of a move. It's like positively 4th Street, right? You know, and you got a lot of nerve to open the record with this song. and you know, the covers are amazing. I mean, James, to me, is just like a perfect, this one needs to be inducted in the perfect pop pantheon very soon. I may have to do it myself. It's just a great song. It really doesn't put a foot wrong. And they don't on this whole record. And, you know, Right After My Heart, the longest song on this record is 3:48. That's the way a record should be. Let's get in there. Let's show what we got and let's get out of there. They certainly were not the Dream Syndicate. They weren't interested in that. They were interested in craftsmanship and you know, just putting it all together. And a word, I think, too, for the producer of this record, David Kahn, who was a well-known figure in San Francisco. He worked at a label called 415 Records. He eventually rose, you know, to be quite a high up there music producer and executive. I think he even produced New Order and all, you know, all these bands, McCartney maybe even or something like that. But he does a great job. The production is really good. It's got a real edge, like you said, but it also feels very tactile, like a Beatles album would. You know, you felt like he was in there helping him make decisions on how to make this thing sound good. And you know, you look at this album cover, right, and it's Susanna Hoffs holding a Rickenbacker. So, and Michael Steele's listening to a 45 on a little portable record player. It's like, yeah, we're here. And, you know, they're completely fully formed at this point. It's amazing.
Yeah, and you got to love just, you look at the cover like, this is for me. I think I'm going to like this one.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to what I said in the beginning, how this is kind of the opposite. This is the most polished of the four albums that we're going over, and yet it was the least in terms of like critical reception. It did not bowl people over. It didn't sell. Columbia was probably expecting more, and I could not give you an answer as to why that is, if they were just not, they didn't get the promotional push, or if the original fans felt like they had gone too commercial. I don't know. That's kind of the biggest surprise for me, is that this did not really get that critical acclaim that just seems like so obvious. Like, this is like a, it's a classic album. What's the problem? It must have been a perception issue. I just don't know.
I definitely think perception is probably part of the issue. But it's surprising. And also to me, it's one of those backhanded, things. I love records that when they came out, people were like, nah, this isn't any good, like, and then it becomes, grows in stature. And, you knew deep down the whole time that it was a great record, but, it is like that. And of course, it's a good thing Columbia Records didn't drop them, because it didn't sell, because that would have been a bad mistake. And I think a crucial part of their story is that because they were on Columbia, they were able to go out on tour with like Huey Lewis and Cyndi Lauper and like really popular things. And eventually, because of that, met Prince. And we know that that worked out pretty well
It
for them.
did. I think seeing them help. And now I'm thinking that maybe it didn't do well because the Go-Go's were so big that they were just
Yes.
expecting another version of them, and they weren't.
Agreed.
And maybe that just turned people off. But when they saw them play, they realized that there it was the real deal. And yeah, I mean, literally the rest is history. I mean, Different Light comes out in 86. I mean, it's just top of the charts and all that. And then they definitely have of the four, the most successful by a wide margin. And
Yes.
they, as far as I know, they haven't officially broken up, but they also haven't played together in quite some time.
Yeah.
I think in the last time they did play, Annette Zelinskis came back to play. Michael Steele, I guess, is out of the picture. There's whenever they
Yeah.
ask about her, there's they just don't say anything. So who knows what the future holds. Doesn't matter. They did what they needed to do. They made their mark, put out some really good records. And yeah, I think they stay pretty true to themselves, even with some of
I
the.
would definitely agree with that. Yeah. You have seen the Bangles.
So that is the only one of the four that I've seen, and I saw them in 1990, like 99, 2000.
Oh, okay.
So they were, I don't even remember if it was like one of those later reunion albums, like Revolution Doll or something, and they were good. I would have preferred more early material. I think they stuck with,
Yeah.
the later stuff, but very engaging. I had a good time. I'm glad I saw him, because who knows if I'll get that chance again. But yeah, they definitely had it. They had the, like Steven said, they had the look, they had the songs, they had the stage presence, complete package. All Over the Place will be there, for me, their definitive statement.
One foot on the train, and I must be mad.
Steve Wynn, who they thought was getting a little too big for his britches at the time.